Is everyone awake and ready? Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother.
Beloved
Jesus
Christ.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Yesterday we met out at Mother's gravesite and had a lovely ceremony there, marking the anniversary, 18 years now, since her Mahasamadhi. And there was a wonderful peace that pervaded, I think, everyone that was there. I certainly felt it keenly. And a blessing and a grace. In truth, masters are omniscient and therefore are not circumscribed by, certainly not a grave, not a body, not anything temporal at all. But such places bring to mind the wonderful life, wonderful memories, and even the remains themselves carry with them a vibration. This is known about very much both in the East and the West, as remnants of saints in both East and West are collected, stored in sacred places. I received word recently that they had completed the Samadhi Temple for Swami Satchidananda, which is built near both Papa and Mataji's Samadhis as well. I remember visiting Sri Yukteswar's Samadhi in the town of Puri, where he had his seaside hermitage. And each one of us who were there received a tremendous blessing from that master. And I think for many of us, reading through the eyes and experience of Master, of Yogananda, could feel that Sri Yukteswar is not very approachable. But at that Samadhi temple, he felt extremely intimate, approachable, and joyful. And what came to my mind at the time was that when he resurrected himself to Master, he told him that he had worn a stern exterior during his earthly incarnation. And perhaps he had been too much of the disciplinarian with Master. And that he was no longer adopting that kind of manner towards him. And that not only was it towards Master, but it was in general, that his outer expression was softening. And what was preeminent at that Samadhi temple in our experience with him was the great joy of the Master. It was Sri Yukteswar himself who said that the definition of God realization is ever new joy, ever new joy. And if we can believe in such a promise, then we can believe that such a great Master who had attained his oneness with God would be pure joy, pure joy. And this is the truth for all great masters, of course. Not only that, but they are the purveyors of truth. And so today I thought I would speak to you about the reality of truth. I wrote this morning, I would like to read it to you, the reality of truth. Is there any such thing as ultimate reality? Or is it simply a matter of perspective? A spiritual view of life reveals that there are superordinate principles that have gone into creating this material reality. Those principles, unlike physical science alone, carry with it moral principles and spiritual truth. Truth, if it indeed be ultimate truth, must transcend the moment. In other words, it must be eternal. Those truths taught by Jesus, to love God and your fellow man, must always be true in order to be classified as truth with a capital T. When Krishna taught Arjuna to do your duty without attachment as a way to freedom, this would need to be true for one living in modern-day West as it was for Arjuna. When the Buddha preached the fourfold way, and that attachment is the handcuffs that keep one in ignorance of the greater reality, it must be true as well for a Muslim living in the 1500s as it was for a monk living in India in the 5th century BC. Truth cannot be transitory, or it is no longer truth. Many years ago, when I was touring Vincent van Gogh's museum in Holland, a guide instructed me to go close to one of the paintings hanging on the wall. At this very close range, I observed many tiny brush strokes. One stroke was white, another a shade of blue, another black. It appeared to be a jumble of strokes, incomprehensible, and nothing anyone would call art. Then the guide asked me to take steps back away from the painting. As I took those steps back, an artistic magic happened. Those disparate strokes of color merged, and what had been nonsensical before now turned into a beautiful pond of water. Now I could discern people walking by the pond, trees around it. A beautiful day in the park now enchanted my eye. This experience helped me to see that principles can be present even when you are standing too close to notice. Eternal truth is not always what is convenient. That may sound obvious, but nevertheless it is true. Someone recently asked my opinion on a current day topic, how I thought the new president was doing in his first few days of office. I made some observations on the subject, and then they followed up with, "Is this the truth of the guru, or is this your opinion, or is there a difference?" Well, this is an interesting question, and one that is germane to this topic of eternal truth. I will begin to answer this question with my own experience of my own guru. Yesterday we marked the anniversary of the Mahasamadhi of Mother Hamilton. We had a lovely service out at her graveside. The peace I felt there was profound as we sang chants, read poems, and spoke of this great godwoman. When I first met Mother, 35 years ago this coming March, I recognized in her presence and her speech truth as I had never heard it before, but as I had longed to hear it. Now, I did not understand all the words and concepts Mother used in her speech. The truth she spoke was profound, deep, and has taken me years to approach what she taught with any comprehension. Now, how could I recognize what she taught was truth when I could not directly apprehend it? Grace allowed me to recognize the sound of truth, even when I could not clearly know it. And I felt inspired. I felt inspired to realize this great fount of truth, even as Mother had come to know it. She promised me this much, and I felt the truth of it. And there was more. Even while Mother had paid the cost for knowing this truth, she was patient with my ignorance. There is no demand that I accept anything just because she said it. Mother did not hold back on expressing truth as God gave it to her. However, she distinguished between truth God gave her in revelation and what she talked about in everyday conversation. Could Mother make factual errors? Yes, she could. Could she misstate something? She said so on occasions. And she differed on certain statements made by Master and Papa. And she said so. Sometimes these misstatements would bring up some doubts in devotees' minds. What could be relied upon from the guru? When the disciple takes as truth what comes from the guru, especially what is said directly to the disciple, and seeks to understand that truth by deepening intuition and direct knowledge, then that disciple fulfills the intent of the guru. when doubt takes the devotee as prisoner, and the seeker of truth does not dive deeper, then that one has not passed the test. For every interaction with the Guru is a call to the seeker for realization of truth. The mind clouded by delusion cannot directly know truth. Too many obstacles obscure it. And even when truth is glimpsed, it is like the sun momentarily peeking through the clouds, and then it is gone. Truth is then fleeting. There were many things Mother told me that I was not certain of as being true. Things about the world, politics, human nature, etc. With few exceptions, these sayings have proven themselves out over time. These truths were not in popular vogue at the time. Some of them still are not. And yet many things she said at the time would be thought to be true now, even though at the time there were those who thought Mother was not keeping up with the times. When I did not reject what Mother said, and I cannot remember a time when I did reject anything she said, even when I was not sure I agreed with it, I would continue to observe, work to deepen my own understanding, and seek to know the truth of the matter. In this way, I think the disciple is wise to follow this example. Seek the truth, and the truth shall set you free, said the Christ, the Anointed One. We have been given a wonderful path, one that holds self-evident that truth can be realized, and truth and God are one. Seek the truth with all of your heart, mind, strength, and soul, and you will find. Knock on the door of the infinite Creator, and you will know ultimate reality. Do not be satisfied with your own thimble-sized intellect and what it can capture from the eternal sea of divinity. The reality of truth will dawn upon you as the newly rising sun and will make plain what was before as if looking through a glass darkly. And when you take steps back and see through the wisdom's eye, the picture of jumbled colors will become a magnificent work of art, and you will scarce believe that it was always there, even when you did not have the eyes to see it. And from Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, this comes from chapter 18. This is the final chapter. And Arjuna has received from Krishna the great truths that Krishna has spoken. And Krishna speaking, thus hath wisdom, most secret of all secrets, been given to thee by me. After exhaustively reflecting about it, act as thou desirest. I would say that Mother or any great master, perhaps at the end of their lives, may say the same thing. Thus hath wisdom, most secret of all secrets, been given to thee by me. After exhaustively reflecting about it, act as thou desirest. Krishna, the Lord of Yoga, the God-united Guru of Arjuna, symbolically the voice of Spirit, speaking as vibrations of truth in the devotee's soul, has revealed in his divine discourse the wondrous truths of the universal science of yoga. O Arjuna, I have narrated to you the most secret wisdom, bestowing on your receptive consciousness the full perception of truth concerning the attainment of liberation. Only by intuitive realization, can one wholly grasp such wisdom as to how human actions are subtly influenced by divine decree, by cosmic nature, and by human karma. Hold on continuously to this perception, for if instead you keep your heart identified with the distorting likes and dislikes of physical ego, you will not understand the mystery of human life and actions. By first perceiving God, you will know how the cosmic delusion and all creatures and their complex activities evolve from Him. From this divine insight, you will understand that so long ago you remain identified with nature or creation, and with ego-guided human actions and desires, you will be bound. But when you withdraw your consciousness, which by nature's influence flows towards external objects, and make it flow back toward God,
you will find liberation. Arjuna, now you know that this secret wisdom about the law of action, the law governing man and the universe and their destinies, can only be experienced by intuitional development. Otherwise, it will always remain hidden from you. It is up to you whether by the free choice of your mind you will start experiencing the truths related by me and thus liberate yourself, or whether you will act contrarily and remain in bondage. Master continues, God in His wisdom, no matter how well expressed in the scriptures by experienced masters, are ever hidden from the sense-identified intellect of material beings. Materialists cannot receive in their small cups of understanding the vast ocean of truth. An ordinary person reading or hearing scriptural truths interprets his visual and auditory sensations and impressions of them according to the limitations of his senses and understanding. A man of spiritual acuity studies the scriptures and then tries to perceive their meaning with his developed intuition. It is better still when a man with the potential of realization first reads or hears truth as interpreted through the fully awake consciousness of a great master or guru, and then meditates on that revelation until he, likewise, perceives that wisdom as his own. Master talked about the way that Sri Yukteswar taught him, and that he would give him one sentence from the Bhagavad Gita. And for weeks, sometimes months, they would stay every day on that one sentence. He would have him meditate on it. They would discuss it. Sri Yukteswar would appraise how well Master was able to intuit into the inner workings of the truth behind that one statement. And after a long trial in this way, they would move on to the next sentence. And they continued on like this, and oftentimes Master would get impatient. He would want to move ahead. He wanted to hear about the next one and then the next one after that. But Sri Yukteswar had something else in mind. Through his evolving and developing intuition, Sri Yukteswar recognized when Master had, in a way, opened his intuition and saw into the internal workings of these truths. And at that point, he said that you are now able to interpret all of these scriptures because you have now intuitively apprehended the real truth behind the words. Mother, in her way of teaching, was not in a linear, sequential kind of a way. I think I and many of us experienced that if we tried to pin Mother down in that kind of a way, in a kind of a way that the mind tried to grasp something, she would quickly evade that trap. She didn't want us to have a purely intellectual understanding. She wanted us to dive deep. She wanted us to go into the truth that was behind the words. I experienced many times when Mother would have given a talk, and I would be hard-pressed to tell you anything afterwards what Mother spoke about, and yet my entire attention was wrapped upon her talk while she gave it. And the reason is because there's a tremendous vibration of truth and a power, spiritual vibratory power that went out with those words. And what I was most receptive to and most listening to was the vibratory power. Now, it's not that the words are meaningless, not at all. They carry with them that vibration. But the vibration that goes with those words is what's more powerful because it lifts you up into higher states of consciousness. It takes you into the same realm, if you can comprehend it, as the guru is speaking from. I can tell you my own experience of standing up before you as Mother asked me to do, and to begin to speak, and to feel the power and the Spirit of God moving through. It is a tremendous thing, I can tell you. And it cannot be done with the intellect. Sometimes I take God aside and I tell Him, God, you really should develop a better sense of humor through me. You should do a few things differently than what you do. And yet he doesn't seem to pay any attention at all. He goes about his own business. And when he speaks through me, it is something that I'm an observer of. And I feel it and I see it. And I perceive the thoughts, the feelings, the spiritual power flowing through me. And I can tell you it's the greatest privilege in the world that I have. Now God sees to it who comes and who receives from that and who chooses not to. We have now these electronic devices. We do live in the electrical age where these words can be transmitted literally around the world in a moment's notice. And many times we have people listening all over the world through computer and through telephone. And it's a wonderful thing because it unites us in a way, in a new kind of a way. And yet, that spiritual vibration must be the thing that is preeminent within it all. It is the one thing that we all worship. It is the one thing that we all attune ourselves to. And if we are sincere and if we are really seeking to get the full value and benefit from these satsangs, from these times of coming together, concerning truth, then it is to be lifted up into the divine state of consciousness. It is to be receptive to what God has to give to us at every particular moment. Jesus knew when he came the power and purity of truth that he was speaking. He knew it because he felt it first within himself. And then it flowed and projected itself out through his words and through his actions. And so he knew, and he knew what he knew. And when there were those who did not comprehend him, those who opposed him, those who fought him every step of the way, he knew within himself that they were representing that oppositional force to God. Not because he felt he was God in a personal sense, but because he felt the power and spirit of God flowing through him. And anyone who was a kindred spirit and was also dedicated to truth, even if they didn't understand the words, even as Nicodemus did not understand the words that Jesus spoke when he talked about a second birth. What, are you to get into your mother's womb and be born again? And Jesus marveled that he didn't have better understanding of the potent words that he spoke using the imagery that he did. But Nicodemus came and he was sincere and he asked for deeper understanding and deeper revelations about what the Master taught. That one was a good one. Jesus knew it. But there are others who were politically motivated, those who were just opposing him every step of the way, not because they really believed he wasn't speaking truth, but because Jesus represented a threat to their authority, to their monetary status, to the image that they held out to the world. And they didn't want to play second fiddle to any young, up-and-coming kind of type who came from a small village, who did not come through any of their educational facilities, but rather Jesus had been educated by the great teacher, the divine teacher within him. He had traveled to India, and he met with the great masters there. And because he was an incarnation of God, an avatar, they recognized such in him. And so they were able to teach him and able to bring out the fullness of God within him. It was the play that God had in mind for him. But also he was able to teach those people of many enlightened masters in that great land. And so is God who came to see God. When Mother first met Master, she was in an obvious state of ignorance of her oneness with God. She yearned for it. She felt it intuitively that there was something greater for her. But she wanted to know the truth. And when she met Master, she had no knowledge of what he was going to talk about. She didn't know what a Swami was. She didn't know what yoga was. She didn't know anything about the kind of things that he spoke. And yet she is absolutely transformed by his speech. And then afterwards, when he touched her and looked into her eyes And she felt that spiritual Shakti, that power, emanate out from the great master and come into her. And it changed her. It changed her never to be the same again. And this is the power that a guru, that a God-man can bring into our lives. It is the power to transform us. And yet the little human mind, it wants to test the master. I was this way with mother. Each time I would come back and I would listen to mother and I would wonder, would it be the same? Would I feel the same? Would I feel uplifted in the same way? Would I feel God's power in her? You see, I was testing her to see if she was what I thought she was, what she said she was. And true enough, I felt it every time. Until I became convinced, even after I took initiation, I was still testing her. But the reality is, as mothers oftentimes said, is that the master has already gained their God realization. They've already paid the price. They've already proved themselves. It's not up to the master to prove himself or herself. It's up to the disciple to prove themselves. But you see, we don't see it this way. We want the proof to come first. And then we see whether we're willing to follow or not. But one of the great things that Mother had was loyalty. She had loyalty to her guru, to her master. And even when things shook her own understanding, even when doubt assailed her, she continued on because she felt the great power of God in him. And even though she wasn't feeling it, and she even saw him as an oppositional force at times. And yet she stuck with it, and because of that, she went through the test. Now, this didn't happen overnight. It lasted for years for her. But she continued on, even when the doubts were there. You see, she told us these things in intimate detail, because she knew this is something that she had experienced, and in her reading in depth of other saints and other spiritual masters, she saw that they experienced much the same. But oftentimes it's not spoken about, because perhaps it would produce doubts in other people's minds. Well, if you doubted that one, maybe they're not really what they say they are. May go the reasoning. I only want to promote that which is positive and uplifting. That is the most beneficial for others. But Mother felt that being able to say every aspect of her journey to God was important. Because when many of us encounter these kinds of doubts, and when many of us go through these kinds of powerful experiences, if we know they are part and parcel of what we must go through in order to attain the ultimate, then it may keep us on the path when otherwise, if we think we're the only ones and no one else has ever experienced this, that it will make us go away. This is of tremendous help to me when I went through the dark night of the soul. And I went through that dark night for 2 years. And I felt very fortunate that I had Mother's teachings around this. Because I knew as I went into it totally that this was the dark night of the soul. Before that, I had been experiencing God's presence continuously, or nearly continuously. And now God was absent, completely gone. No sign of his presence anywhere. But because I had faith, and because I stuck with it all the way through, I was drawn through that experience. And when I came out, it was tremendous, because the experience of God that I had now was deeper than what I had before. It was more profound, it was more permanent than anything that I had before. Now, it is only by staying true, by staying loyal, that you can really go the entire way. If you're shaky, if you're up and down, if you are sometimes there and then you're easily swayed away, you see, you're not going to make the progress. You're not going to make it. And then, Mother, with a great votary of love. She loved her guru, she loved God. Now sometimes people have difficulty. Well, what is it exactly that I'm loving? And first of all, you have to have God experience. You have to be a seeker of truth. You have to be a seeker of ultimate reality. And what you come to know is you have to love that more than you love the things of the world. All these little things entice us. Entertainments and food and desire to know things about the world, experience things all out there. And the restless mind is always driving us, always pushing us. Any time that we try to get still, any time we try to interiorize the mind, the pratyahara aspect of meditation, bringing the mind inside, all of these outer activities draw us out. And even if we dive deep a little bit, suddenly we'll pop right back to the surface because we can't stick with it. And so we have to learn to interiorize the mind. We have to learn to love God more than we love the things of the world, to feel the attraction for spiritual upliftment, to go beyond our fears. Because, as it is said, love is the opposite of fear, and fear is the opposite of love. If you're filled with fear, you cannot love, not really. And so to have that love of God means that you aspire for God, you strive for God, you yearn for God when you don't have Him, more than anything in this world. And then once you attain to God and God consciousness, you love that God consciousness more than you love any other temptations or draws from this world, until your mind becomes so absolutely purified that you no longer have any yearning for anything in this world. You would not think of living a second, a moment, without God consciousness. And if anything, any experience in this world would cost you being one with your beloved Lord, you would reject it out of hand. There would be no attraction for it. And yet you see how we are. We perhaps meditate a little bit in the morning. We feel some of that peace, some of that joy, some of that love. And then we go out into the world, and we're drawn out into the world, and we forget all about that divine presence inside of us. This is not loving God before the world. As Swami Satchitananda used to point out, that if we fall in our practice at all, it's because we have not kept up proper intensity of practice. And so we must keep up the proper intensity. And as Papa said, even when you're experiencing the joy continuously of God, you must continue until there is absolutely not one scrap of desire nature that is different from God's desire nature. That God is with you fully and completely now and always. And He will strip you of everything that you have. Not only of material things, but He can strip you of everything, all your mental faculties, everything that you identify as me and mine can be taken from you. And it is all a test. Do you love these things more than you love me? And Mother had that love. People criticized her. People spoke ill about her. People didn't understand her, even people in the ashram when she went through these tremendous experiences. When she went back to India and she was a fully realized master, people there oftentimes didn't understand her. Who are you to think of yourself as a realized master, you see? Because it's all right for people in the history books. It's all right if somebody sits up high on a pedestal and all people pronoun to them. But what about the one who's out in the crowd? Do they dare think that they could be a realized individual? Can you? And yet, each and every one of us have God within us. Each and every one of us. But we have to love God more than we love this world. We have to be loyal to our last breath, to love, to serve, to be a part of that divine life, and to never let it go, never ever to let it go. And so we see here with Krishna that He allows Arjuna to make the decision, you see. He's given him the truth. He's taught him the truth. He's given him everything that he has to give. And then He says, you must go out and you must decide. What are you going to do here? What are you going to do here? And this is the truth. Every one of us have our God-given free will. And we must choose, moment to moment, day to day. We must choose, what are we to do? Are we to be loyal to God? Are we to love God? Or are we to allow ourselves to be swept out into the ocean of ignorance, to be lost upon that sea one time until we finally cry out with a yearning heart, show me the light, show me the truth, show me the way. And then once shown the way, do we take full and complete advantage of it? We have been given a tremendous gift in being taught the absolute truth, the highest truth, the purest truth, and yet that truth will do us absolutely no good at all unless we put it into action. This is the responsibility that comes with the great privilege. It is a challenge. It is a truth. It is something that is offered to us, but it cannot just simply be given to you. It is a truth to be earned. It is an experience to be gone through. And the greatest thing that we can do to honor Mother, to honor her life, is to do as she would say, to get busy and get your own God realization. I think I speak for all here, but my love for Mother is so much in my heart. I recognize that if she had not come into my life, how radically different my life would have been. And not for the better, not one bit. I wouldn't want to even imagine it. And when we feel this way, and we're motivated this way, and we want more than anything else in this world to please the Masters, that when your last breath comes in this life, that you might rise up out of this reality and into perhaps a greater reality, an affirmation of which you already know in spirit and in your soul. And when you come into that greater reality, you find there the smiling approval of the great Masters. Wouldn't that be a wonderful, wonderful thing? And to have achieved your complete and total freedom and spirit. This is not just for somebody else. As Mother used to say, I'm just one small woman, and if I can do it, you can do it. We can all do it, but we must put in the effort. And we must strive with it with all of our strength, all of our hearts, all of our strength, and all of our minds, and every bit of our soul. There is no slavishness to what the Master says. It is an offering of free will, and what would it be worth if it were not? And so let us strive. Strive to move into that greater reality. Strive to realize the reality of truth, and it shall make you free. If you'll chant with me in closing. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. Mother, oh. O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of
Thy glorious presence.
In
every part of my being.
My
heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender it to Thee.
And surrender it to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with
Thee. I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Mother's blessings and the Master's blessings be upon you. May they inspire you and lift you into His divine consciousness and make you one with the Spirit that they loved and rejoiced in so greatly. Remember that God consciousness is infinite. Do not let your mind limit the possibilities of what you can experience and what you can become, and in truth, what you already are.